Welcome back to Coast AM. I am thrilled and honored to be sharing another show with you. It's a great Saturday night, and the moon is about half full. Always like looking at the moon. In fact, it was up today when I was driving around. And in the next couple hours, we're going to talk about the moon. And we're going to talk about it in a way which you probably haven't heard before. Our guest, Mark Blitz, will join us. And he is someone who really raises some interesting questions, like what is a blood moon? What is a supermoon? And do you know that it could be the same thing? And there was a well-documented extraterrestrial event witnessed by 3 million people about 3,000 years ago. He's going to talk about these different eclipses and how they have tied in to significant events. What he did was he went to the NASA website and looked at their material and got all the different phases of the moon and the interesting events and what their date was, then lined them up with history. And he is painting a picture that these special phases of the moon represent either prophecy, things to come, herald big changes in the world. And if we're going by that rule, then there are some very interesting things yet to come. So stay tuned. We're going to come right back and talk with Pastor Mark Blitz. Welcome back to Coast AM. And I want to thank my last guest, Jim Bell, for coming on. His website is jimbell.com. I'm sorry, it's jimbell.sese.asu.edu. It's a little hard to remember, but it is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. And he has several interesting things that you can check out. One of them is the Spacebook and Mars 3D and Moon 3D. And Buzz Aldrin said that Moon 3D is the next best thing to landing on the moon. High praise indeed. And Mark Biltz is joining us in just a few moments. We're going to talk about this prophecy, these celestial signs that perhaps is there for a reason to guide mankind through the trials and tribulations of these, you know, very difficult times. And it's an interesting concept. You know, are the sun and moon, are they trying to tell us things? Well, let's find out. Mark Biltz, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Rob. So glad to be on with you. Thank you.
It's absolutely my pleasure. Thanks for coming on, because you've never been on Coast before, and I think that you're sort of theories and the way you're looking at it is going to be a revelation, if you'll forgive the pun, to our listeners.
Oh, no, that's great.
Now, what started you looking up in the sky? Because I would assume you started off in this sort of field as someone who had a deep sort of religious sense and studied the Bible for your own personal growth.
Oh, most definitely, Rob. I mean, even as a young kid, I loved astronomy. I had a telescope, loved looking at the stars, the sun and the moon, and seeing the ring around Saturn and the moons around Jupiter. I always had a passion for astronomy. And back in 2008, I had seen a total lunar eclipse, which also is known as a blood moon, because in a total lunar eclipse, the moon turns its blood red. And I saw it over the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. This is in 2008. And I just thought, man, this is great. And then I remember reading how in the last days, the sun would turn to sackcloth and the moon to blood. And so I thought I would go and see if there was any interesting eclipses listed on NASA's website. You know, it's amazing, Rob, that NASA, because everything was created scientifically, NASA has 5,000 years of eclipses recorded. They know exactly when they're going to occur, where they're going to occur, how long they're going to occur. And they go back like 2000 BC to 3000 AD, something like that. So I went and I noticed that there were four total lunar eclipses or blood moons in a row. And I thought, wow, is that a rare event or not? So I did some research, and that's how it all began.
And when did you write the book, Blood Moons?
Just this last October and November is when I started writing it, and it's not released for a week and a half. March 18th is the release date.
Right. And it's already a bestseller, isn't it?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we're already on our second printing, and it's not even released yet. And if anyone goes to Amazon.com, or they'll see us already on the hot new releases and bestsellers.
Mm-hmm. So let's sort of begin to dissect this this idea that there are these special moon phases, and they are referenced in the Bible, because I know in Revelations they talk about when the tribulations come, the moon will turn to blood. Is this was a beginning point for you?
Well, actually, I mean, yes, in some sense, but what's amazing in the Bible, it says God declared the end from the beginning. So if you want to know the end, you actually also need to go to the beginning. Hmm. I mean, I remember, and I'm sure your listeners are aware of the verses in Isaiah, they're in Joel, they're in the Gospels, it's in Revelation about the sun turning to sackcloth and the moon to blood. But what's amazing to me is if we go back to the very beginning in the book of Genesis, chapter 1, verse 14, when it talks about God creating the sun and the moon from the very beginning, almost everyone reads or they think he created it for light and heat. But in Genesis 1:14, it mentions four priorities why he created them, and light and heat wasn't even mentioned. The very first thing it says, it was for signs. That word for signs in Hebrew is ot, and it means signals. Kind of like one if by land, two if by sea. And so here, God says he created the sun and the moon specifically to send signals to us humans. We're the ones who are going to read the signals. And so eclipses are to be used as signals. But then the next verse, and this is one of the big problems, is our English language. The translations are not the best. Because right after it says he created it for signs, it says he created it for seasons, days, and years. Well, when we read that, we think that means our normal calendar, and seasons means fall or spring or winter, but that's not what it means at all. That's the wrong translation. Do you know the Hebrew word that is translated as seasons in Genesis 1, in Leviticus 23, it's translated as the word a feast? Well, when I think of feast, I think of food. So how come the English translators one time translate that same word as fall and another time is food, which is correct? Well, believe it or not, they're both wrong. The Hebrew word moed means a divine appointment. It's like God has a day timer when he's going to intersect with human history. And the days and years doesn't refer to our normal days and years. It refers to what I call the biblical calendar, the biblical years, like the Jubilee year every 50 years, or the Shemitah year every 7 year. And the days refer to the special days like Passover, you know, or Pentecost or Tabernacles. And so that's why God created the sun and the moon, to send signals on his divine appointment.
Yeah, it does say that, actually. It says day from night. Signs for seasons, days, and years. Now, are there other references to the moon specifically and the sun in the Old and New Testament?
Yes. As a matter of fact, in the Psalms, God says the moon is his faithful witness. It's the testify of things to come. And so we see that God uses the sun and the moon for his day timer. It's like a time clock. Think of a giant time clock. When God created Adam, he started his clock. And within Judaism, it is taught that Adam was created on the first day of the month of Tishri. Now, that's roughly our September, you know, so it's not always September 1st, but it's a good thing, you know, place to start. And so it's like we've been on a time clock, and that's when it started.
Now, a blood moon, for people who don't know how this happens, it's a pretty interesting phenomenon that has to do with the blue light of the spectrum sort of spreading out and the red light sort of coming in. It happens during a lunar eclipse, right?
Yes, it most certainly does. Now, NASA records over 5,000 years that there were 12,000 lunar eclipses. But of those 12,000 lunar eclipses, only around 3,700, something like that, were total lunar eclipses. Part of them were partial lunar eclipses, and some of them were called penumbral, where it doesn't go totally through the Earth's umbra, so it's not, it turns more grayish than reddish. But so there's three types of lunar eclipses.
Mm-hmm.
And the blood moon is when it's a total.
Right. So how does it turn red? Tell us about sort of the science behind the light that hits it.
Right. Well, it's basically, as you were saying, certain light waves are go through the Earth's atmosphere, and they go off one direction, and what's left, like the blue colors, what's left is red, and that's what hits the moon. And so this is why the moon looks this blood red. So in the Bible, when it talks about the moon turning to blood, it's not talking literal blood. It's referring to the total lunar eclipse.
Mm. But you feel as though that you were able to go back and look at these events, see when these special lunar phases happen, and tie them in to significant historical events?
Yes, this is what was totally mind-blowing, because, I mean, in the plain text, it says he created them for signals on his feast days. But I don't know of anyone who's ever really connected this together. Now, in the Talmud, this Jewish writing from over 2,000 years ago, they wrote that whenever there's a solar eclipse, it means bad news coming to the nations. But if there's a total lunar eclipse, it means it's bad news coming to Israel. Well, as I did my research, you would not believe this, but in 70 AD, which everyone's familiar pretty much with, that's when the temple was destroyed by Titus from Rome in 70 AD. And because NASA records all these eclipses, I went back and I couldn't believe it. There was a partial lunar eclipse on the Feast of Tabernacles in 69 AD. Followed by a total solar eclipse on March 30th of 70 AD, and it happened on Nisan 1. Now, why that is significant, Nisan 1 is the beginning of the religious calendar. God told Moses, no longer is Tishri 1 or your civil calendar to be the beginning of the year for your religious calendar, is to be Nisan 1, which is roughly April 1st, let's say. Well, Nisan 1 was the grand opening ceremony of Moses' tabernacle when the fire fell from heaven and lit the sacrifice on the altar. And so here, on Nisan 1, a total solar eclipse, this is followed on April 14th of 70 AD with another lunar eclipse. Then the temple's destroyed. On the 9th of Av, which is a very significant date we can go into later. And then we see on Rosh Hashanah, there was a solar eclipse. On the Feast of Tabernacles, another lunar eclipse. On Purim in 71 AD, a lunar eclipse. Again on Nisan 1, a solar eclipse. And again on Rosh Hashanah in 71. So here we have all these eclipses of both the sun and the moon in 69, 70, and 71 AD, all around the destruction of the temple.
Hmm. Well, you're talking about Solomon's temple?
Herod's temple.
Herod. Okay, this is before.
Yeah. Solomon's temple was destroyed around 587 BC.
Okay.
Now, this is 70 AD when Rome destroyed Herod's temple.
Okay. And did it, you know, this event, you could say, well, did it happen before it, or did it happen after it, or right on the same day or same time?
Oh, it happened 2-3 years all around it.
Around it.
Yeah, we have these eclipses in 69 AD, 70 AD, 71 AD. It was all encompassing. God was, you know, saying, hey, this is me. This is what's happening. Hmm. As a matter of fact, if when Christ died, Jesus Christ, you know, some people think it's somewhere between 30 AD and 33 AD. Well, there are solar lunar eclipses all over the feast days in 32 and 33 AD. There's even a total lunar eclipse on Passover in 32 AD. On Tabernacles in 32 AD, again, the partial lunar eclipse in 33 AD, and a partial lunar eclipse on the Feast of Tabernacles in 33, as well as solar eclipses on Rosh Hashanah and Nisan 1. So it's just around that event.
Around the event. Well, here's my question. I'm trying to sort of wrap my head around this, that yes, in antiquity, they were always looking up, looking at the stars, looking at the heavens. How would they interpret these eclipses, these partial eclipses, these different things? It's not necessarily saying one thing or another, even if it does happen around the same time of a historical event.
Well, I think in Usher's book on the Annals of Human History, there's chapters and chapters and chapters of humans who have been looking at the stars and even, you know, reading the eclipses as boding bad for them. Yeah, I think it's even when Columbus was in South America, he was in a world of trouble, but he checked his charts and knew there was an eclipse coming. And, you know, he kind of played that up to the natives, and they thought he controlled the sun and the moon because of the eclipse. But human beings forever have been looking to the heavens, and they see a solar or a lunar eclipse as something that's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And the amazing thing about a solar and lunar eclipse, when you think of all the languages around the world, God is using something that everyone can relate to, and it's understood no matter what your language is. That's why in Psalms 19 it says, "The heavens declare the glory of God." Everyone can see the heavens.
Okay.
You know.
But if they're happening around events, how can they be interpreted one way or the other?
Well, I think when that comes, for example, if you want me to fast forward to one of the times that it happened in this 19th century, or the 20th century, in the 1900s, I should say, you almost have to look at it in terms of what happened around them. I mean, sometimes we don't know what's going to happen,
right,
but it's after it's happened, we can say, okay, that's what it meant.
Huh.
For example, one of the amazing things, if you want me to go into it now, is these four total lunar eclipses in a row that happened back in 1949 and 1950. Well, hey, Israel became a nation in 1948. This was in May, and it was the following April in 1949 and 1950 that there were these four blood moons in a row on Passover and Tabernacles both years. Now, some might say, well, that happened after the event. How can you interpret that? You know, well, all I know is that it could be, and I'm speculating here, that God is telling the world that it wasn't the United Nations that founded Israel so much as it was his hand behind the scenes. Then the same thing in 1967 when Israel captured Jerusalem in June. Well, there was a blood moon that happened prior to it this time, and in April on Passover. So here are these two great historic events of Israel becoming a nation, Israel recapturing Jerusalem. You have these four blood moons in a row on Passover and Tabernacles.
Right, and you're referring to the Six-Day War?
Yes, yeah. I'm referring to the Six-Day War, yes.
Yeah. And how rare are these blood moons, then, just to give people a sense of how often they occur, generally?
Okay, yeah, great, great question. Okay, well, here's what we have. Of the 12,000 eclipses over 5,000 years, like I said, there's only been about 3,400 total lunar eclipses, okay? Now, when you look at the number, that number over 5,000 years, that means a total lunar eclipse by itself only happens once every year and a half, okay? Well, think about this. If they only happen once every year and a half, and now we have four in a row within a year and a half. And not only that, they fall on these biblical holidays. These odds are truly astronomical. As a matter of fact, having four blood moons in a row without having a partial lunar eclipse or a penumbral lunar eclipse in between has only happened 62 times in the last 2,000 years, but only eight of those 62 times in the last 2,000 years did these four blood moons fall on the biblical holidays. So that gives you an idea that if it's only happened eight times, that you have four blood moons in a row falling on the feast days, and then you tie in the fact that in 1967 they were connected to Israel recapturing Jerusalem, they were connected to Israel becoming a nation in 48, and then it didn't happen at all, clear back to around 1493 and 1494. And guess what? That's when all the Jews were kicked out of Spain and Portugal on the 9th of Av in 1492.
Hmm. Okay, well, there's certainly a lot to get into here. And let's just sort of pause it right here. And then we come back, we'll start going through these and talk a little bit more about some of these amazing events, like this mass sighting. I've never heard this before, of this UFO, this alien event witnessed by, gosh, 3 million people? I want to hear more about that. We're talking with Mark Biltz, and his website is elshaddaiministries.us. I know it's difficult to spell, but if you go to coasttocoastam.com, it's linked up right there for you. Stay right around. right where you are. We're coming right back. We're going to dive into this a little deeper. See you on the other side. Welcome back to Coast AM. And on this beautiful night, we're talking about, well, celestial prophecy. And to quote Revelation chapter 6, verse 12, I watched as the Lamb broke the sixth seal, and there was a great earthquake. The sun became as dark as a black cloth, and the moon became as red as blood. We're talking to Mark Biltz about this idea that we can decode these celestial prophecies into historical events. More right after the break. Welcome back to Coast AM. My name is Rob Simone. We're talking with Mark Biltz. He is the founder of El Shaddai Ministries in Washington State. Very well known and as a popular commentary for subject matter having to do with the Feast of the Lord. And he has produced several DVDs about that. And that's all up at his website, elshaddaiministries.us, which is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. And while you're there, get the free apps, iTunes, Android, become a Coast Insider, and you can get all the downloads you want commercial free. Not only do you get all that, but you get access to George Norrie's private email system. You get special chat opportunities and a whole lot more. It's Coast Insider right now at coasttocoastam.com. And Mark, before the break, we were talking about this idea, these events, and I just read one of the revelations about the blood moon prophecy. Now, when you read that, when you hear this very ominous sort of a vision that Mark had when he opened the sixth seal and there was a great earthquake, do you think that some of these signs not only had to do with these events and these religious holidays, but could tie into some earth changes and some sort of, I don't know, the trials and tribulations of the return of the Lord, so to speak?
Yes, most definitely, Rob. I most assuredly do. The very fact that God said from the beginning, he's going to communicate to us through eclipses. That's what it says in Genesis. He created the sun and the moon to send us signals. But the big key, the huge key is they have to occur on his calendar, not on our regular calendar. It's when they occur on his calendar. And when you put these things together, and then when you read Revelation like you did, Rob, 6:12, and you see the sun becoming black as sackcloth and the moon becoming blood, and then you tie them to the biblical calendar and see the events, this could be a huge tie into when the events could occur.
Well, okay, if you are suggesting that these eclipses and these special lunar events are really God's way of communicating with us, then wouldn't there be some record of this in the rabbinical traditions or even talked about in the Bible where it's not just enough to say, yes, these are signs, and I'm going to communicate to you through these signs, but to give us a little bit more, because it's pretty vague when these things come. They happen before and after. Are they good or bad? It's still a bit of a mystery, don't you think?
Yes, well, like I said, it's when they occur on these holidays, and then it's going to be somewhere, not necessarily happen on the very day of the eclipse. It's kind of like a flashing red warning light saying you better stop, or there could be potential danger ahead, a bridge out or something like that. And so it's important for your listeners to know, I'm not saying the events are going to happen on the day of the eclipses at all. I think these could become as warning signs, mainly for us to be aware that God is in control. What's amazing about the calendar is the patterns. And the whole, just like with any detective, he has to look for patterns to figure out, to profile who the criminal is, so to speak. Let me tell your listeners just one specific day on the calendar that helps solidify this. Let's say the 9th of August. Okay, and on the biblical calendar, it's the ninth day of the month of Av. That's A-V, Av. On that day, that was the day the 10 spies brought the bad report, and Joshua and Caleb brought the good report. Well, because they brought the bad report on that day, they rejected the promised land because they were afraid of the giants on the ninth of Av. That particular day became cursed throughout history. When Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the temple in 587 BC, it happened on the ninth of Av. 600 years later, when Titus from Rome destroyed the temple again in 70 AD, it happened on the very same day, the ninth of Av. In 1290, all the Jews were kicked out of England on the 9th of Av. In 1492, all the Jews were kicked out of Spain on the 9th of Av. World War I started on the 9th of Av. Hitler's proclamation to kill the Jews was on the 9th of Av. And amazingly enough, now let's take it to modern-day events. In 2005, Israel rejected the Promised Land again, evacuating the Gaza Strip at sunset on the 9th of Av. And so when you see these patterns, and then the next year, the Lebanon War started on the 17th of Tammuz. Well, that was the same day they worshipped the golden calf. And that's the same day Nebuchadnezzar came through the northern walls to destroy the city. It's the same day Rome came through the northern walls to destroy the city. It's the same day the missiles from Lebanon came through the northern border.
Okay.
And so what's fascinating is when you connect the dots of the patterns. So I'm not saying something is definitely going to happen on those specific days, but it's when you see the scientific pattern. It's the science.
Yeah.
You see a pattern. Makes me think that.
Yeah. Yes. Well, okay. Well, I got to ask you then, what about this, that it's not just the happenstance of these things happening on this particular day, but maybe there are forces at work, you know, these counter forces, these evil forces, if you like, that choose this particular day because it has some power that they're trying to tap into to get their, you know, evil plan off the ground. Maybe it's really about saying, hey, there is this cabal that's choosing these dates to do these things because they know or have access to some information that somehow gives their plan more power if they pick these specific dates.
Well, you know what? I think you may very well be right there, but still I see the hand of God upon this. As a matter of fact, let me support what you're saying by looking at it this way. And most Christians are not aware of this, but going back to the moon, the Egyptians worshipped the moon god. Okay, they worshipped the constellations. They worshipped Aries, which was the ram. Well, did you know that because they worshipped the lamb or the ram, that's why when the Israelites went into Egypt, Joseph told them, you know, just tell them you're shepherds. The Egyptians despise shepherds. They want nothing to do with you. Well, the reason they despise shepherds is because the sheep was to be one of their gods. They worship the lamb god. And so what does God have the Israelites do? I think everyone loves a barbecue outside to smell the, you know, hamburgers, barbecue. But what does God do? He tells the Israelis that they're to kill the Egyptians' lamb god. And then they're to barbecue it whole so all the Egyptians know that they're killing their lamb god. So here it's in the springtime. There's all these waves of their lamb god being sacrificed. And then what does God tell them to do? To put the blood on the doorpost so all the Egyptians will know which house slew their god. And then when does this happen? On Passover, which is when the constellation Aries is what's being seen in the heavens, and they believe that it was at a full moon that their god was at the apex of its powers. So what does God do? He takes the lamb that the Egyptians worship as god, destroys them on Passover, saying, no, you don't have the Lamb of God. I have the real Lamb of God. So God even uses those things that the people worship to destroy them.
So you're saying that there is this knowledge that's out there that has to do with perhaps these lunar events that some people, some, I don't know, what you want to call them, cabals or other people who have influence take advantage of.
Very well could. Yeah. Very well could.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I think it's interesting, though, too, that oftentimes that force often overplays its hand. What I mean by that is, and from the celestial prophecies, what do we know too? That Israel was to become a nation again. And so what does this evil force do? It's trying to do everything it can to destroy the Jews before they can become a nation. But it's in the process of trying to destroy them that the nation of Israel is created. So no matter what this evil force tries to do, there's a more powerful force that turns it around.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Egypt. I want to ask you about this. This well-documented extraterrestrial event witnessed by 3 million people. Tell us about that.
Yeah, could you imagine? I mean, a lot of people are looking for extraterrestrial intelligence. Is there something out there that can help us live a better life, that can help this world and all of its turmoil? Well, here, they completely overlook a well-documented extraterrestrial event that was, like you said, witnessed by over 3 million people. Here in a wilderness located in the Middle East, just out of Egypt, over 3 million people at one time heard an extraterrestrial voice speaking to them all at once. There was even a written record of the conversation that was recorded, telling mankind, giving them instructions on how to live. They gave this extraterrestrial voice, gave these 3 million people written instructions for how to run their economy, court systems, how to treat animals, environmental instructions. They even told specific times during the year when they were to meet with this extraterrestrial. The voice told them that they were to use the sun and the moon for their calendar, and they'd be used for signals as to when significant events were coming. And it's called the Bible. This was on Mount Sinai. And so I believe that there are this extraterrestrial.
Well, tell us about where you're getting this information from.
I would say I get it from the book of Exodus. This is recorded. An event. It's in Exodus chapter 19 where God appears to Israel, and it's all written down, it's recorded, and my goodness, he tells us how to live. But the problem is people ignore the instructions.
So this is when the Israelites were moving through the desert?
Yes, 3,500 years ago.
Okay. Now, but there wasn't 3 million people in that area, was there, at that time?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought there was, 50,000 or something?
Oh, no. There was a whole lot more than that. And that it's recorded the number of Jews that left. It was 600,000 or so, just of the men over the age of 20 or something like that. But then you also have all the women. You have all the children. There was a mixed multitude that left Egypt with them. There was quite a few people. But I can't tell. I don't know of any other recorded event in history that has a written record of an extraterrestrial speaking to all these people at once, and we still have the written record today of what was said.
Well, okay, this is Exodus chapter
19.
Chapter 19, verses?
I'll just start with verse 1 and go all the way through about verse 24, or chapter 24. It's Exodus chapter 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, mm-hmm. 24.
Okay. Well, you know, I am very much interested in Exodus because it's a fascinating tale, you know, Moses bringing the Israelites, and they're there for what, how many years, 70 years?
40 years.
40 years, excuse me. I'm getting my biblical numbers all askew. So they're there for quite a long time, and they're getting restless. He goes up to the mountaintop, Mount Sinai. Now, is this before or after they got the Ten Commandments?
I love it. That's a great question, because a lot of people get that mixed up. Moses went up and down that mountain a dozen times.
Yeah.
And then he goes back up and for 40 days, and he gets the Ten Commandments. And as he's coming back down, as you were saying, they're worshiping this golden calf, so he ends up breaking them, having to deal with them. And then he goes back up for another 40 days, and then he comes back down again saying, okay, all is well.
So this event, this E.T. event, what happened after?
Yes. It happened. God spoke to all of them all at once, and they were so afraid. They said to Moses, Moses, you go talk to God. We're too afraid. There's this loud thunder and voices. So Moses says, okay, fine. I'll go hear from him one-on-one. So everybody heard God speaking at once. And this is what recorded in Exodus 19. And then it talks about how they told Moses, look, you go get it, and then you come tell us what he said. Hmm. So then at that point, he went up, got more direction, and then came down. But everyone heard God's voice first.
Okay. So what verse do you interpret as referencing an extraterrestrial?
Okay, well, sure. Let me go right there to Exodus chapter 19. And what do we see here? It says that... in verse 9, it says how the Lord said to Moses, I'm going to come to you in a thick cloud that the people may hear when I speak with you and believe you forever. You know, and so Moses goes and tells them. And then it says here in verse 18. It says Mount Sinai was altogether on smoke. God or the Lord descends upon it in fire, and the mountain, there was this gigantic earthquake. And then it says in verse 19 how there's this voice of a like a shofar that sounded real long and got louder and louder. And it says God answered him by a voice. And so if you go to chapter 20, here is where God begins speaking to everyone. And it lists the Ten Commandments. But see, God actually spoke the Ten Commandments first. It was after God spoke it that Moses went up and had the Ten Commandments written on a stone. But everybody heard the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20 speaking. And then if you'll find in verse 19, here's where it says, the people said to Moses, you speak with us and we will hear, but don't let God speak with us or else we're going to die.
Okay, so where does the ET come in?
Well, God is an extraterrestrial. I don't think God is a human being. I think God, he's the ET. God is the non-human, non-earthly inhabitant who was speaking from heaven.
So you're saying that the God of the Old Testament is actually a God with a lowercase g, as we like to say on this program?
No, that's what I'm saying. He's a higher case g. That's why he's not a human. That's why he's an extraterrestrial.
Extraterrestrial.
Yeah, he's not from this earth. He created earth. He's above this.
Okay. When you say ET, I was thinking more of not God, but perhaps some sort of sentient being from a distant planet.
Okay, well, no, I think that God is a sentient being, not from this universe.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, it's a pretty far way to go. Now, going back to this moment where Moses comes back down, because I have to ask this, I love this, and he's got the Ten Commandments. First of all, what language do you think the Ten Commandments were written in?
Oh, I think Hebrew, totally Hebrew.
Because I would have thought maybe they would have been hieroglyphics, because they all just came from Egypt. They probably would have, you know, that would have been the language they would have been using.
Well, actually, you know, the Hebrew language, they have a Proto-Canaanite or Paleo-Hebrew. The ancient Hebrew, every letter was a picture. Every letter was a word. Every letter is a number. And as a matter of fact, the English translation of Ten Commandments is incorrect. From the Hebrew, it's not really Ten Commandments. It's the Ten Words.
And right after that, it says that he was very, you know, miffed that the Israelites were dancing around this golden calf. And it says that Moses took the calf, burned it in a fire, mixed it ashes with water, and made the Israelites drink it. What do you think they were referring to there?
Well, I think exactly what you said. You know, I don't know what that sounds like a pretty strange concoction, but I believe that that's what it said, that that's more than likely what happened.
Yeah, but why? What was Moses doing with this fire and the ashes and the water? I mean, some people think that it's monatomic gold he's referencing, but I was just wondering what your take was on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I think they had to eat the fruit of their work, so to speak. But yeah, beyond that, I'm not really sure. You might have a better take on that than me.
Well, listen, you know, it definitely be something you would remember, and you wouldn't do it again, that's for sure. Well, let's hold it right there. Now, tell people about your book and where they can find it.
Sure. The book is called Blood Moons, and they can get it at Amazon.com. Of course, they have to wait for another 2 weeks to get it, but they can order it directly from our website. They can get it from WND.com, WorldNet Daily, the publisher, you know, or for us. And sometimes El Shaddai Ministries is hard to remember, but if you just put my name, Mark Biltz, in Google, it'll take you right to our website.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, hold it right there, because when we come back, we're going to talk about these blood moons that are coming next month. That's right. There is a significant event. There's more than one of them. And according to our guest, it's going to mean something very significant. We're talking about sort of decoding these celestial prophecies, and coming up, there are going to be a few of them. And I'm told that this is a very rare event. So I'm interested in hearing what his take on the matter is. His website, Mark Biltz, is linked up right now at coasttocoastam.com. And there, of course, you can find all the information about the show, how to become a Coast Insider, and get this program commercial-free whenever you like. And even going back 3 years, it's a great deal. It's all up there for you. And don't forget about the apps that are absolutely free for iTunes and Android. We're coming to you in every single way that we possibly can. More right after the break with Mark Biltz. My name is Rob Simone, and this is Coast to Coast AM.